were in an online conversation with the ESN. And so I will invite you here if you can introduce yourself, your background, and your research interest in children and childhood, and also to explain us how you adopt a childhood studies perspective in your work with the children in India. So,
thank you, Chiara, for opening the conversation. And so very quickly, to give an overview, I have been working on childhood and children for the last 9 years or so. And I think my interests, it's difficult to tape down my interest to certain fixed points since it's been a while. So I am essentially a sociologist. And I began in around 2007 or 8. My doctoral research was about ideas of protected childhood among the Bengali middle class and how that translated also into the lived experiences of children. So very quickly, and this is something, again, I think we are going to be conversing about later, somewhere later down this exchange. Around 2005-2007, childhood studies, as it was unfolding in Western academia, for want of a better word, had certain very specific concerns and very specific ways of defining fields and issues related to children or childhood. And I wanted to be in conversation with that because it was exciting. It foregrounded children as actors. It critiqued the socialization sort of perspective, but it was not really catering to many contexts of children's lives in the global south. And I thought one of the things which were missing in the larger dominant imaginations of global southern childhoods vis-a-vis global northern childhoods was the question of class, and ignoring it could be very, very dangerous. It was an oversimplification. It led to an oversimplification, and which is why I focused on the middle class, trying to bridge the gap, or what I perceived to be a gap then, between children's lives here and children's lives in the north. And that's how it began. I had continually engaged with questions of agency, generational order, but with always from without. So I've always seen myself as positioned on the cusp of childhood studies. And now I do different things. I'm still interested in questions of class and children's leisure activities, but I'm more interested in conceptually looking at the relationships between chronological age, time, generational location. I've also moved towards the history of children, and I'm also looking at children's, Indian children and their location in transnational encounters in the early 20th century. So, yeah, and we can talk about our works later down the line. Chiara, tell us about your exciting work with children and their participation in political circumstances in the Middle East.
Yeah, okay. So, I start to be interested in childhood studies in general as approach, as a theoretical framework during my thesis dissertation. My thesis dissertation was about early childhood education and care in Egypt. And I adopted the approach of childhood studies to explore the social and political construction of early childhood in Egypt. And to understand how national and international education policies affected the development of early care and education, and also the social and political construction of the idea of early childhood in Egypt. I think it's important to know which kind of framework I adopted for my thesis. I consider childhood as a specific and a structured and a cultural component of a society. So childhood as a social construction and as a variable of social analysis that can never be taken into consideration without other variables, for example, gender, social class, cultures, politics. Right. So the idea is that childhood is considered as a structural element integrated into the organized social life. So in this way, with this kind of approach, I try to understand how childhood can be shaped by macro societal, institutional, political, economic factors. And so I try to explain through this kind of this theoretical approach, I try to explain, to explore how development of early childhood education care system in Egypt has been shaped by national, local factors, right, and by international international organization, the international agenda of international organization, for example, World Bank and UNESCO. So the idea was to analyze if the implementation of early childhood care education in Egypt is just a result of a globalization of education, or can be and shaped by, of course, international organization, international influence, international educational policies, and by local cultural economic factors. For example, the place of women in the labor market, for example, women education, or family, religion, the Islam, the Islamic Muslim context. So the idea is to understand how those factors, those endogenous factors and exogenous factors can shape the idea, the construction of early childhood in contemporary Egypt. After my thesis, my dissertation, I continue to be interested in exploring the role and the participation of children in during the uprising in Egypt and Tunisia in 2010 and 2011. Maybe for the larger audience, in 2011, in 2010, in 2011, Middle East and North Africa countries have been experienced very important historical political change. For example, in Egypt and in Tunisia, and also the other countries, for example, in Libya, in Syria, and so on. So my focus was to understand whether it was possible to have a contribution of the children in those popular mobilizations. For example, what is their role? How they participated in those political revolutionary movements, political revolution movements, and how those events, revolutionary events, affected their everyday life, and also their process, their knowledge of the politics, their relationship with the politics, and so their political socialization. So I analyze different cases. First, in Egypt, I try to analyze how children participated in those political movements through observing online groups, how they take part on online groups, Facebook groups, in order to disseminate information about meetings, about demonstrations, and so on. And also, for example, how they participated in demonstrations, and my first observation about this topic have been published in 2014 in the book chapter. And later I was interested to see how children, of course, how they participated in those political manifestation, demonstration, and how society, so adult people, consider them in this. For example, I explored the cases of martyred children. It means children who were killed during demonstration in Egypt, and they have been accredited by the society, by the Egyptian people, as a martyr of the revolution. So in this way, I try to demonstrate that besides youth groups that were the main important, right, the main actor of those revolutions. So besides this main group, social group, there's social category that is youth, right, we can also find the children. So also children participated in those demonstrations until the death, and Egyptian people recognized them, the status, the level of martyr of the revolution as for adult people and youth, young people. So after that, I shift my interest in what was the participation of the children in revolutionary movements in Tunisia, and there I tried to analyze their participation through the lens of political agency. So right, how to consider a political agency as a concept where a concept and larger concept of politics, of the political. It means consider as politics every place, every context, also context, for example, family or school, that normally they are considered, in generally speaking, as a no political context setting. And also try to analyze how children are active in their everyday life in order to express, in order to experience their political agency.
Right. And how old are, sorry to interrupt, but how old are the children? Could you tell us a little bit about the age of the children you're interested in?
Yeah, I made the interviews with the children between 10 and 17 years old.
Right.
In Asia, in 2018 and 2019. And but of course, I also had the opportunity to interview people, adult people, so people from young generation, from 18 years old until adult, for example, older,
right,
people.
Right.
My idea was to see children in their context. So it means in their family context, in their social context, so also to explain, also to understand their way of acting as agent, as a political agent, within his his or his her family, and we didn't right. hear peer groups, and we didn't hear neighbor. So for this reason, I also interviewed adult people, not just children. And so I think this is my introduction or background. I want to ask you and question about your methodology. I really enjoyed your work and specifically your fieldwork experience with protecting middle class children from Kolkata. And what is how it was hard to you to do research with children without parents. It was great. I think really it was a very, very interesting aspect of your research. So, my question is, might you explain how did you proceed to find a way to be in interaction with the children without their parents? So really to do adopt and the methodology with children without parents, because we know with the parents can be when children are interviewed with the children, with the parents can be altering right. their replies, their answers. So please let me know, let me explain better your fieldwork.
Thank you very much for the question, Tiara. I think I was always envious when I was a research scholar. I was envious of people like you who had fields where children did things, especially like, you know, being part of political movements. And although I was excited about doing field work in Kolkata, where the middle class had a more pedagogized, scholarized approach to children's upbringing, it was boring sometimes because I was reading exciting works about children's resistance and very liberal notions of agency being touted about. And the children I looked at, they were very obedient, compliant, to say the least. And what made things worse was I was doing my PhD from a university in Germany in Freiburg, and the German sociology of childhood had a sort of guideline about how to do research with children. And an important part of the guideline was that you have to talk to the child in isolation. There should be no parents around. And it did not work out. I think my first round of fieldwork, I talked to about 30 children. Not one single case could I access the child alone. And that had a lot to do with also, the lifestyle patterns, the financial condition, the circumstances of the urban middle class. Most of them lived in apartments which were about 600 to 700 square meters, I think. And there were several family members living together, sometimes a grandparent along with parents and the children. So it was really too much of a luxury to expect to have the child where no one else could hear, you know, what was happening. And often sometimes if I did get the child in one room and I would ask her or him a certain question, like, you know, what do you do after school? What do you watch on TV? And the child would be quiet. I could hear the parent from the next room prompting the child to say, tell her that you watch Discovery Channel or National Geographic. And in the beginning, it was very frustrating. And when I went back after the first round of fieldwork, a professor in a university from Germany, she told me she was horrified. She said, you have to throw away all your interviews because they have been adulterated with adult voices. And it's something I was also thinking at that point, and I was hoping that, you know, I wouldn't have to throw away all that work. But I did not. Eventually, I did not. And it's something I kept thinking throughout that maybe, I mean, this, the very fact that even where adults were not immediately present, but in the children's narratives, the adults were always present. A lot of, almost 60% of the children I talked to, they were between 9 to 12. They were the only child of parents, their parents. So they were mostly single child families. And they did not really, in the city, they did not really, there were not too many parks. They did not go out to play. The maximum that came up in terms of playing was playing badminton, either downstairs, if there was a parking space. And that was also with the grandparents. Or with their parents in the terrace, right? And it got me thinking that, you know, this is a very sanitized imagination of a child's world as being in isolation, segregated from adult worlds. And oftentimes, you know, when I talk to 10-year-olds, they knew a lot of details about their parents' offices, and because they were also privy to the same kind of gossip that their parents were. And it got me thinking. And I think now I'm in a more comfortable position, but back then I was not. And talking to children or research with children does not in any way imply to me today talking to children and segregation from adults. And this is exactly what I really found fantastic about your work, because you keep talking about, and I think we're going to come back to it again, you keep talking about how certain political sensibilities are part of the larger societal fabric in certain contexts, in Tunisia, in Egypt. And it is only natural that children would be co-participants in it, as much as other age categories. I mean, even apart from children and middle-aged adults, there would be elderly people, there would be adolescents, and a host of other actors. And this is something which I feel I'm in a position of problematizing now. Very quickly, something I forgot to mention before in the introduction. I finished a project a couple of years back, which I'm still writing about. It's about how child roles are enacted in theater for young audiences in India, right? And I also see how, of course, there are commercial reasons why you don't have children in too many commercial plays. But you have maximum, you have 40 or 50-year-old men playing the roles of 8 or 10-year-old children in the commercially successful children's plays. And my fieldwork involved talking to these different stakeholders and asking them what, how they understood childhood, how they tried embodying childhood. And to a certain extent, childhood is also something which has multiple stakeholders. It would be a mistake to assume somehow that childhood is something which only has to be understood with relation to actors of a certain chronological age, right?
Of course.
And in many ways, like actors who are in their mid-40s tried to convince me that they understood childhood better, and they understood better what it meant to be children than actual children today, who are so busy with smartphones, and they don't know what age means, what age does to your body, to your life, to your values. And they have the retrospective knowledge, so they are better at being children professionally as well as at heart than actual children. And this is actually something I wanted to come back with regard to your work, because you actually mentioned this, right, in your work on child martyrs in Egypt. You've said somewhere that being a child seems to have nothing to do with age, but it is more likely to be linked to a context.
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about it a little bit? And maybe we could also kind of, reflect on how, like, a location from within the global south, quote-unquote, also heightens or enables a more nuanced understanding of these, problematization of chronological age and childhood.
Thank you for the question. I think that the concern about how we approach children as through an chronological age, through an chronological perspective, or a contextual perspective, is it's an important point that have been highlighted in childhood studies. For example, since the paradigm of new social studies of childhood, the idea was that childhood is a social construction that have been considered in relation with the context, with the space, with the time. So yes. in this way, through my fieldwork in Egypt when I explore the cases of very young children participating in demonstration and killed as adult people, I understood that in this case they were not different between adult and you and the children. It means that armed forces those who caused death to those children made no difference if they were children or they were adults. So in this case, the chronological age of children was not taken account. It was just taken account at is a children experience in being part of the revolution as a human being. And for this reason, I explored the paper that you mentioned, Mastered the Childhood, and also in other papers with another paper about Syrian refugee children in Lebanon, mentioned how it was important to contextualize the childhood. It was important to consider the context where the child is living in order to understand his subjectivities. So it's political subjectivities and also is agency. So I can say that I tried to face the question of chronological age in considering a childhood and children through the analysis of political and sociological tools. For example, I explored political socialization. I use as a theoretical tool political socialization or political agency, because this kind of tool gives you the opportunity to explore the individuality of each individual, each human being, whether he's young, whether he's old, whether he's a child or he's an adult and so on. So it's in a way to consider the construction, the building of the political subjectivities, considering the context, considering the setting, considering the historical framework, and this kind of analysis of individual of a political subjectivity can be adopted for each person, for each individual. So, of course, in my case, I stress the importance on the children because I have to explain to you one thing. When they were uprising in the Middle East and North Africa countries, the focus, the attention of mass media, of scholars, was on youth. So youth considered as the main actor of those movements. Okay, so youth is means not children, not teenagers. Okay,
true.
And for my research, it was very important to see. Okay, I know we have any kind of evidence that youth lead this kind of revolution, okay? Uprising the popular mobilization. But what about the children? What about right. the teenagers? Because they are a part of the society. They are part of the people. They are part of this context. So what's where they are? Where are right. the children? What they are doing?
You can just open the floor to talk about how childhood in the global south is problematized in your work.
Directly,
yeah.
And because I wanted to ask you the final question about how. Children's participation in revolutions would also be construed as an essentially southern phenomenon or a Middle Eastern phenomenon, distracting from similar contexts in the global north. So how through your work you kind of envision a way out of this what you call the infantilization of childhood, the pathologization of global south and global southern childhoods. So maybe we could sort of end with a reflection on that point, both of us.
Yeah, right?
Because it's
yeah,
something. Right. Thank you so much, Chiara.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you that you were making a point about political agency when you got cut off. So would you like to finish that point? Or do you remember how that sentence was?
Of course, we are recording now, but they will arrange how to push together the ball, the two videos. So find a way.
Yeah.
Anyway, just maybe I finished the point. So the link between the first videos recording and the second recording is this one. So in my work focusing on children and their participation in uprising in Egypt right. and Tunisia as objective to show that this kind of social category as children and teenagers should not be considered as ignored social class, and they should be considered as an active group of the Egyptian and Tunisian society in their participation in their role in the uprising. So so I think I will stop now, and we want to ask to Hia in your work you try to seek to problematize the concept of childhood in the global south with which kind of instrument, as a theoretical instrument or conceptual instrument.
Right. Thank you for the question, Chiara. So I think for me, the entry point or the lenses have not remained constant over the years. One was, of course, back from my doctoral research, like I mentioned before, that class was an intermediate category for me to approach childhood. And it was a very deliberate approach on my part, because I thought this whole debate about scholarized, protected, domesticated childhoods that was unfolding completely, it sort of is least or children who work in factories in Bangladesh or India. Of, you know, colonization and so on, which get erased in these very easy and neat categorizations. So back then, an entry point for me was to look at, use the category of childhood as a Bildungsmoratorium. It was borrowed from a German educationist who also borrowed from psychology of the 1940s to talk about childhood as an extended period, but which was societally created through the demands of post-war demand of industrialization, emergence of a new bourgeoisie, and so on. That was my entry point then. Now, I think, if I locate my own politics with regard to research with children and childhood, and how that connects to childhood studies, I think one enduring aspect of childhood studies, the dominant mainstream childhood studies, would be, it's a certain valorization and what we mentioned before, analytical as well as concept, in terms of field work, empirical field work, a segregation of the world of children from the world of other actors. Right. And I love it when Daniel Cook says that adults have been a ghostly presence in childhood studies. They lurk somewhere. And if you look at people like you in your work and my earlier work, adults are everywhere. And I'm sure it's not just a global South phenomenon, but of course, also given consideration like demographical considerations and density of population, lifestyles, living arrangements. Maybe it could well be that in certain contexts in the global South, children are more thickly enmeshed with adults in their everyday lives, right? And to segregate them in terms of field work or even analytically segregate them would be a mistake. And I, of course, understand childhood studies' concern that you have to be wary so that you don't end up making a socialization kind of approach or reproduce the ills of earlier social sciences, which ignored the child. But I think it's a mistake to sort of clinically separate children from others in order to understand childhood better. So you maintain an analytical focus, and this goes for everything. This also goes for understanding children's agency. And a lot is being said and done right now to critique a liberal notion of selfhood, of free choice. But it is also important to understand how children's agency is relational and how other people's other agencies or other actors should also be seen in connection to that. So this is one way in which those of us located working with childhoods in the global South can also contribute to the debate by also bringing in other age categories. Not just other age categories, but critiquing this, I don't have a word for it, but this deliberate overlooking of other actors so as not to thwart or impede the agency, quote unquote, of the vulnerable child. I also find it problematic that childhood studies sometimes unwittingly reproduces this discourse about the vulnerability of children. Right, and I wanted to end on this note with a question to you as well, because you constantly throughout your work you've been so marvelously consistent in your own subdued way. You have critiqued how childhood studies also manages to infantilize children, and it is compounded with another problem that many contexts in which children's lives are unfolded are pathologized when they are located in the global South, even when the counterparts of these exist in the global North. So, of course, there's child labor. I mean, Germany has a history of employing children. Switzerland has a history of employing children to do domestic labor. And it is not children have been, I mean, Greta Thunberg is as much a political agent as a child in Egypt or Tunisia, but she will get constituted in a certain way, and an Egyptian child will get constituted in a different way. So how do you, and especially when the Middle East is also viewed in a certain, through a certain lens, in larger international relations sort of perspective, how would you like to talk a little bit about the challenges of talking about children in political uprisings without this essentially becoming conflated with a discourse about a typical Arabic context or a typical Middle Eastern or Southern context? So yeah, that's my final question.
Yeah, of course. I agree with you when you say that in some cases childhood studies they find a way to explain the approach to the children, the childhood, and is it like a problematic approach to childhood, above all in a global South, about pathologization of childhood and infantilization of childhood. And with my research with the children and the politics, because this is the link, it means the idea was to, for me, it was to put together in dialogue two factors, two elements, can be oxymoron relation between children, right, childhood, and politics. And of course, this kind of a relation, when you put children in communication, in relation with the politics, with the political, and they, you consider them as a political agent with the political subjectivities, there is some kind of can be a problematic to explain this this kind of approach just in a global South. And for example, when part of my theoretical approach about political socialization is come from readings of American scholars from a political science during produced during 15, 16, 17, 18. It means with this kind of theoretical approach, with this kind of literature come from political science, I try to put children on the focus, on the light, and to consider them as a political agent. And it means political agents, it means those who are aware of the changing, the political changing in their context, in their particular specific context, and also to try to shed light on their actions. For example, I can give you an example with a child in during the revolution in Tunisia. He told me that he, in order to know what's happening in his cities during the revolution, during the uprising, it means in 2000, between December 2010 and January 2011, he explained me that he went to, he usually went to a shop where there were many adult people who speak about the events, the political events, what the demonstration, so on. And so in this way, just for his action of listening these people speaking about politics, he tried to be more informed about what will be the next demonstration in the city, because he was not in the network, right? It was not a political activist, it was not a member of a political party, so he had not this kind of information. So is in this way I can thanks to his experience, I can say how the political talk between adults can contribute, can help children to be more and more aware about their context. And so also in this case, I use the political talk as an instrument for children, of course, to develop their political socialization, to develop their political consciousness about the context, about the situation around them. In this way, of course, you can imagine that I try to dismantle the idea, the concept that there is an infantization of childhood. Because if you consider children as a political actor and engaged in their context, in their social context, of course they cannot be considered as just a child. Yeah, this is the point. They cannot be considered as a member of the society, have to be protected, have to be a vulnerable member of the society. The point is that many, above all in the Middle East and North Africa countries, they are recipients of head development from international organizations and international agencies. Of course, main part of this kind of head is for the development of a childhood, the protection of a childhood, education of a childhood, and so on for the children. So in this case, if we want to analyze childhood in the Middle East and North Africa countries, the region, through this humanitarian development head, we can see that the agenda of international organizations are more focused, they strengthen the idea of and protected children and protected childhood and protected child, without considering that in this framework, in the local framework, can be experience, local experience, where children are in some way obliged to be active, to be agent. For example, in cases of Syrian refugee children in Lebanon, I demonstrated how children try to be engaged in labor, of course, in some labor experience, in some forms of labor, in order to help to sustain their his family. Of course, if you analyze this kind of a situation from an international and international agency or international development perspective, you can see that it's not possible that a child have to be protected. A child cannot be an active part in this family. But in this specific situation, in the case of Syrian children in Lebanon, where there are refugees and where most of regulation, Lebanese regulation in PIDA avoid adult people to have refugees, adult people to have a job, the only solution, for example, the only way to sustain the family is can be the labor, can be the sustained by the children. So of course, I think it's very important to consider the contextualization, in which way we consider where is the action of the children. So the contextualization of the childhood give us the opportunity to look and to analyze some specific or general situation in an appropriate way. Maybe as you say that, I think that before you say that there are some in general speaking, there are some subjects, some topics that are typically for South childhood in South, you know, global South.
Yeah.
And can be other specific topics typical of the North, global North. I don't think so. I just think that every topic can be, we can find, for example, labor, as you explained, the labor situation in everywhere in both North and global North and the South, and for example, there is also authors that demonstrate that the militarization of childhood is not only a phenomenon that you can find in the global South, in specific area of the global South, for example, in Africa or even in Syria, but also in the North countries. So, this is, I think this is my point about the problematic of pathologization and empathization of childhood.
It was fantastic talking to you, Tiara. And and although we come from very different disciplinary backgrounds and very different entry points with regard to how we research children, I do think that, I know when people will be hearing the conversation, they will also be able to tease out the points of overlap that exist between our works, and that in some ways, being located in the Global South also enables you to sort of critically look at childhood studies as it is now, and sort of a way out of some of the earlier blind lanes, maybe.
Yeah.
Fantastic talking to you. Looking forward to reading more of your work.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure. Should we end here?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and thank you, KZYSC, for hosting this conversation between us.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much, and
thank
really
you.
I enjoyed your reading. So thank you very much.
I really did too. Yeah, I really look forward to reading more of your work. And yeah, we'll stay in touch.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And thank you, Godizer, for give us the opportunity to have this conversation. Thank you very much, Holly.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you, Akhil Sanjana.
Yeah.
Dhrupakanandini is here. Oh, hi, you're here.
Yeah, I just had a little bit of work to do in the middle, so I got up. So I didn't hear all
Not a problem.
But did get a little bit towards the end. It sounds fantastic. Looking forward to the whole piece.